You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We're going to go back to the Ohio Business Machines hotline and bring in Matt Derry, brother of Todd, co-host of Derry and Sharp, weekdays from 3 to 7 on Detroit Sports 105.1. Matt, this is great to talk to you on the radio, my friend.
Brother of Todd, that's some intro, man. Oh, man.
Strong for your resume.
it's right at the top, right at the top. So good to talk to you guys. Nate, you doing all right?
I'm very happy with what's happening here. I know that it's a little unorthodox, to say the least, but I think for a team that has had a problem of winning, putting some very smart people who are great problem solvers with the task of figuring out how to solve that is a good thing as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I think there's only one direction they can go.
Correct.
They've hit rock bottom so many times there in Berea that, quite honestly, the ladder is so long, but apparently at least they're climbing upwards. That's good.
Yes, hopefully they will. Let's talk about a guy rumored to be on the Browns wish list, or certainly will get an interview with the Browns defensive coordinator of the Detroit Lions, Terrell Austin. What can you tell us about him?
I don't think it's a rumor. I don't know if he's there today or not, but Terrell Austin, I know, is going to talk to the Browns. And,
yep.
And here's the thing about him. I think that you will not find a better person than Terrell Austin, and a guy that I think players would rally around. Just a tremendous guy. Not somebody that I know all that well, but have had conversations with, including before the first preseason game, just down on the field before the game against the Jets, and the Lions played them this year. Just went up and talked to him a little bit to get some info and some stuff on, some stuff off the record, and he was great, very welcoming. I think he's a guy that last season, I really thought after last year in 2014, his stock was it would never be higher. He took a defense that was basically Ndamukong Suh, DeAndre Levy, and a lot of young players and a lot of mix-and-match guys and turned it into the number two defense in all of football. I don't think anybody's ever looked at the Lions, Nathan, and said, this is a team that is defense first and the identity was defense. But at least last season in 2014, when they went 11-5 under Jim Caldwell in their first year, Terrell Austin did wonders with that defense. This year it started slowly because, quite honestly, without Sue and without Levy, you're going to struggle. And so it doesn't surprise me he's out there and is going to get interviews. I think he's a good guy and he's a good coach. But really, I was more surprised he didn't get a head coaching job last offseason.
Philosophically, what is he all about?
You know what, Andrew, I don't think you're going to see a team that is like Arizona the last couple of years with Todd Bowles and the new D coordinator this past year, whose name escapes me, James something or other. They go right at you. I think Terrell Austin will blitz when need be, but I don't think I think he's a guy that when he came in and took over the defense after Jim Schwartz was fired and both Schwartz and Gunther Cunningham were running the Lions defense sort of together in 2013, they had this philosophy called the wide nine where
yep.
they had defensive linemen like almost like lined up on the damn sideline.
Yep.
And it was, it left holes in the middle of the defense. And the one thing I think that Terrell Austin's defense had done the last 2 years have stopped the run and have allowed the middle guys and the defensive tackles and even sometimes the defensive ends and the linebackers to do their thing between the tackles defensively. I don't think a Terrell Austin coach team or a Terrell Austin defensive coordinated team will ever be a team that gets gashed too much against the run.
Cleveland Browns this season, as they were gashed repeatedly against the run. For those who aren't familiar with him, it's a 4-3-3-4, just for people out there.
4-3.
Yep.
Rely a lot on rotating defensive tackles and defensive ends. I think this past season, Ziggy Ansah was on the field a ton and obviously, made the Pro Bowl and deservedly so with 14.5 sacks.
Yep.
But I think for the most part, Terrell Austin's a guy that's going to listen to his players and get some input from them. Stephen Tulloch, having him back this year after he tore his ACL last year, coming back this year, they had made the decision this year to take Tulloch off the field on third down, something they hadn't done. And I think Tulloch, for the years he has been in the league, and I know Stephen very well, I don't think he was happy about it, but because he was playing for Terrell Austin and there was that communication there, there weren't any issues. I mean, let's be honest. You guys are covering the Browns, and, the Berea big top is in rare form. There's not a much of a circus here because Caldwell, Austin, guys like that, for the most part, have the ear of the players, and there's not a lot of chatter. There's not a lot of yelling on the sidelines and coaches. It's a pretty well-run outfit here. The issue here was they didn't win enough games.
One of the things that it was an issue here as well was developing talent, and Ziggy Ansah took a big leap this year. Darius Slade did. Is that something you think Terrell Austin was good at and his staff at developing some of the younger talent on this team?
I'll say this, Andrew, especially in the secondary. I think Darius Slade has gotten better with every year, and I think he deserved to be in the Pro Bowl or close to it this year at cornerback. Two other guys that maybe people in Cleveland have no idea who they are, but Nevin Lawson, mid-round cornerback pick from 2 years ago, and Quandre Diggs this past year. Those guys both had really nice years, and I think Terrell Austin has done a nice job with the corners. That would be, to me, the strength of the Lions defense coming back next year outside of Ziggy. If I'm running the Lions, which I'm not, but I would say they need some D tackles, they need some linebackers, and they would need another safety. But all in all, the cornerback spot, I think, is something that, Austin is a former defensive back, is a guy that has coached defensive backs before. Yep. In Baltimore and other places, you've seen some development with the corners, and certainly if the Browns were to hire him, and I know you guys have some cornerbacks there that are have been non-factors, and you drafted rather high. We don't have to rub their noses in it, but maybe Austin can make them into players.
Can you kind of lay out the situation in which both he and Caldwell kind of are facing at the moment right now?
It's crazy because most fans thought after the Hail Mary game and loss to Green Bay that, all right, enough's enough. Not that anybody was blaming. I'll tell you one thing. Terrell Austin didn't take a lot of heat for not having Calvin Johnson on the field on the last play to knock down the Hail Mary. And that is something that I think the Browns, the Dolphins, whomever else interviews Austin should ask him. It's a legitimate question. Hey, tell us about Green Bay. Why you guys didn't use a timeout to set your defense up. Yeah. Why you didn't have Calvin Johnson on the field. And why you were defending against a lateral play and not a Hail Mary. I was there. The entire building knew what was coming except for Caldwell and Austin. But Caldwell took most of the heat for that, not Austin, because at the end, head coach's final say. But I think it's a legitimate question to ask. Terrell would be, hey, how can you then defend that play? Because that play basically almost cost them their season.
Do you think Martin Mayhew got a little bit of a raw deal this year? Are you surprised that, given what happened, that he was let go? Because when you look at that team, at least from a Browns lens, there's a lot of talent on that team. You know who your foundation pieces are on both sides of the ball. It's a talented roster.
Pretty talented, but not talented enough. And I think especially when, you guys, I'm sure, have rehashed it. When you pass up an Aaron Donald, an sure. Odell Beckham Jr., a Zach Martin, all players of need for the Lions, and you take Eric Ebron, just like you guys took Justin Gilbert, you have to get scrutiny for that. That was year one going into Caldwell. Caldwell gets a job, says the time is now, we're going to win now, this is not a rebuild, and you know what you need. And you also know that Sue may not come back, and they think he is, and even though I think they lowballed him, I think they thought he was going to come back and didn't need Aaron Donald, but you have to think more forward than that. You have to say, if Donald's the best player on our board, plus he can fill a need if, in fact, in 2 years Sue leaves, then you'd be smarter than that. And I think that the Ebron pick, especially at 10, while he's not a horrible player, but he's not a future Hall of Famer like Donald, Martin, who they really could have used on the offensive line, and, of course, Odell Beckham Jr. is who he is. I think that draft doomed Martin Mayhew, who did a nice job in free agency, brought in Glover Quinn and Nate Burleson, guys that really helped the foundation over the years. But drafting-wise, no, I think it was the right move, and it also showed that ownership was not happy with a 1-7 start, and that's where they blamed it.
No question. They turned it around. Should have been 7-1 on the other end if it weren't for that Hail Mary. Matt, when you look at this team, what do you make of the rumors about Calvin Johnson perhaps contemplating retirement?
Yeah, I heard that yesterday as well. I talked to one former player who said he is completely banged up, and the fact
you could tell it this year, you could tell.
Yeah, and the fact that he played in all 16 games was really remarkable. He made the Pro Bowl, but I don't think he had as good a year as Doug Baldwin or a few others. You're the fantasy experts, so you tell me. But
Allen Robinson
used to be, right, Nate?
That's right. That's right.
I still dabble from time to time
with my good friends at FanDuel.
Right. I don't want to get you in trouble, but Calvin.
Although your brother did whoop me this year in our league.
Oh man, how about that? The two-time champ.
That's
but
right.
Calvin, I think, despite all that, did have a very good year. But yes, 30 years old, 9 years. And look, we have an issue here in that Barry Sanders walked away from the Lions in his prime. But Barry was still a dominant player. I don't think Calvin is a dominant player anymore. His teammates will say he is. I think he's terrific, but I don't think he's dominant anymore. But if this were to happen, the fans would look up and say, wow. I mean, look, everybody's angry in Cleveland, but people are pretty angry here too. And they would say, wow, our best guy is walking away in his prime again. But the question is, I think he's on the downward spiral at 30. And from what I've heard, he's pretty banged up, knees, ankles. He didn't play in the preseason this past year because they just didn't want him to. So that should tell you a little something about him health-wise. But what a great guy, and still is a great player, but not a dominant player anymore.
Megatron, do you think Matt Stafford, it's a lock that he's back? That's one of the, people talk about him maybe hitting the free agent market. I can't see it. I don't know how it would be possible, especially with the way that he blossomed under the tutelage of Jim Bob Cooter, which is enjoy the fact that the offensive coordinator of your team is named Jim Bob Cooter.
Oh, Cooter country. It was hot. I think Stafford will be back. You know, there's so many questions about Caldwell, Calvin, Austin, if he gets a job, Jim Bob, all that. But I think the one thing that the Lions can be satisfied with is, number one, there's no Jameis Winstons or Mariotas in this draft that they would move up and get. And number two, Stafford is under their control for two more years. The contract isn't egregious. I mean,
I think he can play.
Right. And so maybe they found something. But again, if the new general manager, and right now they're in a holding pattern with Caldwell and the new GM, if the new GM comes in and says, yeah, we'll keep Jim, then Jim Bob Cooter stays. But if they hired from outside and the general manager said, I want to put my own furniture in my own house, in my new house, then yeah, there's a chance that Cooter would go somewhere else, maybe go with Adam Gase, who we work with in Denver, wherever Adam goes. So that is a question that I think right now, with all the other questions, Stafford has cemented himself here for another year at least.
Do you think if Caldwell's let go, would Austin be a top candidate in Detroit, or would they want to go somewhere, go completely outside of the organization for that hire?
I don't think Terrell Austin is going to be the head coach here. I think Terrell Austin will be the head coach somewhere else, or the defensive coordinator here next year if he doesn't get a head coaching job and Caldwell stays. But there's been no talk here about why it won't. Right now it's either Caldwell or somebody completely different that the new GM picks. I doubt that Austin will be the head coach here, if that makes any sense.
All right, Matt, we appreciate the time. It was good to talk with you finally, get you on the air, and best of luck to you in your offseason there with the Detroit Lions. And as we kind of go through this here in Cleveland, we'll see how it all shakes out for these two teams here in the middle of our great nation.
All right, fellas, thank you.
All right, Matt Derry, you can catch him in the Detroit area on 105.1 from 3 to 7, co-host of Derry and Sharp. Talk to Terrell Austin. Sound positive. But it seems like a guy who might not yet be ready, but it sounds like a very good defensive coordinator and actually did some very good things with that defense in terms of developing some of those young guys.
Yeah, certainly a guy that falls in the category of wouldn't be surprised if he got a job, wouldn't be surprised if he didn't get a job.
I think that's right.
When you're looking at candidates now, I think at this stage, I think we'd all be surprised if Adam Gase goes back to Chicago as offensive coordinator this year, because he's been talked up so much as that top candidate. He might be the only one. Are there any other guys that you would be surprised now at this point if they don't get a head coaching job? They're on that market?
That I would be surprised if they didn't.
Yeah.
Like Patricia, I think, could go either way.
Right.
I'm not sure that he'll get one. Marone.
Well,
somebody's got to get these jobs.
We think Hugh Jackson's probably a lock.
I think Hugh Jackson is a lock to be a head coach somewhere.
Yeah.
So, I think, the guy now that it's amazing that he's not being talked about is Chip Kelly. And I think what was said publicly about Chip Kelly scared teams off, but you know how the NFL works. What Jeffrey Lurie is telling people about that experience, and players are telling other players about that experience, I think a lot of people are scared off Chip Kelly right now.
I also know how the NFL works in terms of this marination that happens when you step away from football for a year.
Puts the rose, bloom back on your rose.
I mean, when people talk about John Gruden and Bill Cowher, every year that they're away from football, it's like they become a bigger and bigger draw. So I think Kelly's smartest move might be really to step away for a year, then re-enter the fray, and suddenly people would be falling over themselves to try to interview him.
I think you are right. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get back to the phone lines, 216-578-0850. Take your calls and your tweets. 2:30 will go around the league, which is going to be a lot of fun. And, of course, the mailbag. So get your questions in, Browns_daily. Use the hashtag AskCBD, or you can tweet it to whatever. You don't have to tweet to anybody. Just use the hashtag AskCBD. We'll get to those questions, wrap up our second hour here. Zagura, Gribbs, Gibbs, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Dumb.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Zagura and Andrew Gribble with you here on ESPN 850 WKNR. Let's go back to the phones. We've got our guy Jim in Akron. Jim, welcome to the show.
What's going on, fellas?
How you doing?
You know what? I'm hanging in there. You know, I want to give this analytics a try. You know, everybody wants to say, oh, you're hiring this guy for baseball and da-da-da-da-da. You know, what we've tried before hasn't worked. And, you know, the national guys, they're already quick to make a joke out of Cleveland. So, really, what do you have to lose by trying something that could be innovative? You know, these guys seem to be very smart guys. You know, you're not too many dummies go to Harvard.
Correct.
You know, and I think that, you know, these guys that crunch the numbers, and then you put a football guy underneath them, and you feed the football guy the information. You know, I don't see a problem with trying something new. You know, as a Browns fan, you know, since as long as I can remember, you know, I can remember, you know, how good it feels to be in the playoffs and to go to playoff games and watching your team on TV in the playoffs. And, you know, I think it's our turn. You know, I think we shouldn't just give up and say that we're going to stink next year. You know, there have been, you know, there's been times when you go from worst to first. And why not it be our time?
Yeah, true. I think that this is going to be a little bit of a – I think it's going to be a little bit more of a process, but you never know. I do think you will see tangible progress from the Cleveland Browns in terms of just how the organization functions. And I think that that is just as important, given where the Browns have been over the last 4 years, as to getting where you need to be on the field. Because at the end of the day, all this is about is winning football games. That's what every move that's been made is about, winning football games. There are no contests for the best organization, because ultimately, I guess there is, the best organizations win football games. And that's what this is all about.
And I think you could be the same football team and win more than three games next year. I mean, I think it's almost hard to win just three games in a season, based on that. You think of all the games where the Browns were in and they kind of broke the other way at the end. I mean, this team is poised to win more games, but I think it is, as Jimmy Haslam acknowledged on Sunday, this is a long-term project. And I just think the team, knowing the little that we know right now, I think it's just going to definitely, no matter what, even if they win two more games, three more games, if you lose one more game, I think it's just going to have a completely different look to it, and that starts, as we've discussed, at the top. There's a different look at the top, and there's going to be a different look on the field in 2016.
That certainly is the goal and the hope here with the Cleveland Browns, that it is a different look than what we have seen. So apparently, just to keep you up to speed on this with Hugh Jackson, apparently Hugh Jackson is not only going to interview on Sunday with the Browns, he will also interview with the Dolphins and 49ers on Sunday, but the Browns will get the first interview with Hugh Jackson on Sunday, according to reports.
How does that work?
Does the other team have
to wait in the lobby? Like,
yeah, I wonder.
You know, like that awkward time when you're like interviewing for a job and you like kind of walk by some of the other candidates and stuff like
that. Good luck to you.
Is it like Mad Men, where the different agencies and everything like that are going in to make their pitch?
I think that is what it's going to be. I wonder if he sits in a room or if he goes into three different rooms. I wonder if you come into the room and you hold court with Hugh and see what it goes. The interesting thing about it is he's going to have multiple looks at different styles of organization immediately, with the Browns and what we're doing, with the Dolphins, and then with the 49ers. And I think three completely different setups.
Yeah, because the Dolphins are looking now, are they a little bit more traditional? Are the old-fashioned model? And then the 49ers are coming off a year where they fired a guy after 1 year.
And Jim Harbaugh was quite pleased with the results for the San Francisco 49ers this year.
The subtweet of all subtweets.
It was, yes. Yes, indeed. By the way, I don't know if you've seen it, Gribbs. The temperatures, negative 22. We just got a text from Pimar's Golf. Said Vikings game time temp should be minus 15 with wind chills. They said minus 22 is what I saw. That's going to be brutal. It makes me feel like I got it pretty good when I was cold with 20 degrees and wind for the Chiefs game. Minus 22?
Who does that favor, though? Because we've seen the Vikings. Wasn't it really cold when they played the Packers and totally laid an egg, like, and the Packers just ran all over them?
In theory, it would favor the team that is probably the most effective at running the football and playing power football, which...
Wouldn't that be equal with the Seahawks with getting Marshawn back and the way they've run the ball this year?
I think so, but is Marshawn rusty? I don't know. I don't think a running back is all that rusty, but that's a tough one. I think that the passing game advantage lies with the Seahawks, so maybe that negates that some of it, but that's a physical team. I think it's just going to be like a slugfest, and whoever makes the most mistakes, I think, loses that game.
Are we chalking up 38-7 as an aberration from last month?
If they get up 20, you know, if they get up, let's call it 17-0 or something, they could blast them again like that, because that's not, the Vikings aren't built to come back like that.
Yeah, I mean, the Vikings are just a team I can't read, and according to Although Vegas, a team no one can read. They were the best against the spread all year this year, because once you think they're going in one direction, they go the other direction.
They're a pretty good football team, and I'll tell you what, when they asked Teddy to open it up, they hung. They went toe-to-toe with Arizona. And if it weren't for the strip sack at the end of the game, maybe they go to overtime. Maybe they win that game. He had a lot of yards, over 300 in that game. So they can play different styles. I think they're in this game, though, they're going to just – it's going to be smashed up. But you're going against a team that's been the toughest against the run.
I have no read on any of these playoff games.
I think if it ended up being Washington-Minnesota – and Seattle, Green Bay, I think it would have been very clear that Seattle would beat Green Bay. And I think it would have been pretty clear to me, anyway, that Minnesota would beat Washington.
On the road?
Yeah.
In Washington? Kirk Cousins is good in Washington.
You like that?
I do.
They're handing out you like that towels for their rally towels at that game. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to go around the league. You can still call us up, 216-578-0850. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Let's bring in the Gibbs portion of the Zagura Gribbs Gibbs team for a little around the league.
Number one.
All right, guys. First and foremost, did you guys see the news that Megatron possibly contemplating retirement?
Yes,
that is coming down.
We talked about that with Matt Derry, Gibbs.
See, this is what happens when I have to step out.
Yes, it
That's
is
good.
Shocking. We were talking about even though only 9 years in the league, easy Hall of Famer for me.
Oh yeah, there's not a doubt.
Yeah.
Here's another development with that story. If he did walk away, he'd be walking away from $16 million.
Yep.
$12.5 million non-guaranteed.
Now, that was this year, yeah. 15.95.
Well, Garofalo says $12.5 million non-guaranteed base salary next year.
Then he tweeted back to himself and said, actually, it's 15.95.
Oh, you're right. God, I'm shaking off the rust being back here.
That's all right, Gibbs. You can do it.
All right. Question number one, guys. Outside of the Browns, rank the NFL coach openings from best to worst. Giants, 49ers, Eagles, Titans, and Dolphins, and maybe, well, we won't even get into the Saints. We'll know in 24 minutes what's going on with them.
I'm pretty sure. It sounds like he's going to stay. It sounds like his price tag.
You don't have a press conference to announce you're going somewhere.
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
That means Drew Brees
right.
staying?
So here I'm going.
We'll get to that.
I'm going the Giants would be my top choice. Then I would say the Eagles. Then the Titans. Then I would actually say the Browns. Then the Dolphins. Then the 49ers. Because the Giants, you got Eli. And I know he's getting up there, but you've got Eli. You've got Beckham. You've got some foundational pieces. Jason Pierre-Paul. And I think he'll get better as he adapts to his hand injury. The Eagles, I still think that's a talented roster. And you're in the NFC, so I think it's probably just a high-profile job. The Titans, you've got Marcus Mariota, so you've got your franchise quarterback that puts you out of the game. Then I would say the Browns because you have the number two pick, and I think you've got a good opportunity. You're going to have a good process here. Dolphins have the quarterback in Tannehill, but I think Tannehill hurts you long-term. more than he helps you, and some bad contracts there. Tannehill, Ndamukong, Jordan Cameron, and then the 49ers, you have no quarterback. Everybody that was good on your team has retired and left. That's not a great situation.
Yeah, you know,
other than the brand.
Our list is very similar. I've got one difference. I've got Giants one. I think you can go there and win right away. I think
you have
that's
the Titans
clear.
Too.
I have the Titans at number
you
two
could,
because
I could see that.
I'm looking at one. You've got really low standards to come into.
Yep.
You don't have to do much to impress the bosses there. Two, you've got your quarterback. And three, I'm more bumping the Eagles down because I'm wondering if I've got a roster full of guys built for one system, and I'm going to have to go in there and you have more of a rebuild on your hands than it looks like.
Fair.
Right away. And I think you've maybe got a couple bad contracts there as well, DeMarco Murray obviously being one of them.
Well, unless you
or
run
you can
the
find a way to use him, yeah.
It would,
but when you've got some, and again, I know Sam Bradford stayed relatively healthy this year, but long term, he needs to prove it to me over more than just one season. But then I've got the Dolphins and I've got the 49ers. I think the 49ers are just kind of, they've got a couple years before they're going to be.
Do you have
back
the Browns ahead of those two?
Yes, I do. But
so you would have the Browns fourth out of
the Dolphins is just a weird job to me right now.
I agree.
You're in an incredibly tough division as well, just like the AFC North is. But I think that's a division where all three of the other teams seem to be either the Patriots or they're moving in the Patriots direction. I just think that's it's an interesting roster that's had some weird things, the Miko Grimes thing. I mean, it's piling up there.
Number two.
Gibbs, hold on. Before you get to number two, Gibbs, what do you agree with our ranking?
I'd go Giants. I would actually go Titans two.
Yeah, because of Mariota.
I'd go Dolphins three.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I think there's talent there. I think that you might just need to you might need a Tom Coughlin-esque type guy to go in there and just turn things around my way or get out. I'd put the Eagles at four and the 49ers at five.
So you think the Browns are the worst job?
No. The question was outside of the Browns.
I know, but I inserted them. So did Grip. So where would you insert the Browns?
I'd probably put them fourth.
Okay.
Fourth out of the six.
That's what I had.
I mean, okay. That's, you know, let's be realistic. The Giants, you mentioned it. They got a quarterback.
Absolutely.
And I think the Eagles, it's a big market. And the Titans, you've got your franchise quarterback.
That's who I put them after as well.
Yeah.
So would you would be... You think the Browns' job is more appealing than the Dolphins?
Yeah. I mean, some like you said, Ndamukong Suh is the big one that scares me. I feel like the team kind of follows his work ethic, and he has the ability to bring down an entire team.
Yeah, it seemed like it certainly seemed that way. That's
doesn't he remind you of Haynesworth?
Yeah, it kind of seems that way.
Yeah. All right, question number two, guys: is Tom Coughlin's resume enough to get him into the Hall of Fame?
So that's an interesting one. And you look at his overall one-loss record, not that great. Actually, it's the same. Somebody put some stat out there. It's the exact same as Jeff Fisher's. But he has two Super Bowls. He seems to be a guy that people absolutely love. Is he one of the best coaches of all time? Who does he compare to that is a Hall of Fame coach?
I don't know if he compares to anyone, but I'm saying yes, he's a Hall of Famer because one, the two Super Bowls are big for me. Two, what he did with Jacksonville—that's as an expansion team. They had immediate success. I mean, one bad year and then immediate success, four straight playoff appearances with the Jags as an expansion team. I mean, I know he had a lot of talent on that team that he kind of—I don't know how much of a role he had in that, but that's something that is very hard to do. And the fact that he had that kind of success at two different places. I put him up there.
Didn't he take Jacksonville to the AFC Championship in year two?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
You know what's amazing? In his 20 years, he had 10 winning seasons.
It's pretty solid.
Yeah.
10 winning seasons.
Especially when four or five of those are in Jacksonville as an expansion.
His last three, though, not winning seasons. Games over 500. He's 20 games over 500 for his career. Two conference championships, five division championships in 20 years, which is, in reality, that's exactly what it should be. You have four teams in each division.
Is he the best, one of the best of all-time playoff coaches?
Nah, 12-7.
That's still pretty good.
It's good. I don't know.
And they won a lot of games when they were, like, the sixth seed. They go into a lot of road wins in those
playoff
totals.
Their playoff runs were both were both four-game runs.
So, and in Jacksonville, too.
So in those playoff runs, he went 8-0 in the two Super Bowl runs. So other than the two Super Bowls, he's 4-7 in the playoffs. But he's got two Super Bowls. I think he's going to get in. I don't know. I don't know how you quantify it. He's impacted.
I don't know. I feel like the NFL Hall of Fame lets everybody in at some point.
He impacted. I know his players absolutely love him. You know, so he has impacted those players in a very positive way. I don't know. I think he's got a chance. Certainly.
Gribbs?
I would put him in. Does he have a chance? I think it'll take a few years of when he's eligible to get in, but I think he will eventually get
in. He's going to have to wait.
All right, Vince Lombardi was the winningest coach in playoff history. I'm trying to look for guys that have had at least like 10 playoff games.
But if we're not going to put Coughlin in the Hall of Fame because of his two Super Bowls, are you not putting Eli in because of his two Super Bowls?
Eli's going to get there with his stats. Like, let me ask you this. Is Tom Flores in the Hall of Fame? No, right?
I have no idea.
No.
Hold on, I'm looking.
He's not. He'd have the little thing by his name. He's not. He's similar. 8-3 in the playoffs. Two Super Bowls.
Yeah, he's
10 games over 500. 5 years in the playoffs out of 12 coaching. He's actually not that dissimilar from Coughlin in terms of the way his stats line.
The NFL's first minority head coach to win a Super Bowl, winning it twice.
So that's an interesting one.
And he's not in.
That's one to watch.
Yep.
That's one to watch. I think that's kind of a comparable for him. Coughlin did it much longer, but basically same winning percentage exactly. Flores had a better playoff winning percentage. 0.527 for Flores, 0.531 for Coughlin. They made the playoffs basically in the similar amount of years. Well, Flores was a better playoff coach.
And Dave DiNatale with a dynamite drop-in just said Seifert 1-2, Shanahan 1-2.
And Seifert should definitely be in. If Seifert,
listen to you 49er homer.
65% winning percentage and then 67% in the playoffs. Seifert was a great coach. And then he went to Carolina and was all right. What, Steve Berline? 8-8, 7-9, and then 1-15. He ended on 1. Think if he didn't have that 1-15 year, I believe he was the winningest coach in football history at that point.
My thing is, there's been 50 Super Bowls, or there's going to be 50 Super Bowls.
If you've won,
he's won two of them. I think you got to put him in.
So you're starting the campaign. Seifert, Flores, Coughlin, Gribble wants him in.
All right, one more because then we got to get to break. Number three. All right, Sean Payton's talking at 3:00.
I think he's saying, go do the next one.
Who's the number one quarterback on your board coming out of college going into the 2016 draft?
Jared Goff, and it is not close for me.
I think it's Goff. I think Paxton Lynch clearly has the most upside, can develop. But things I've read about him, this wasn't a guy that had the quarterback grooming growing up, didn't go to the quarterback camps. So he's raw. And I don't know if you can use the number two pick on a raw quarterback. But I think there's going to be another quarterback over these next couple months that emerges from the ashes and gets in that first-round discussion because, you know, a couple years ago at this point, we had no idea who Jimmy Garoppolo was. He ends up being a second-round pick with the Patriots. I think someone is going to emerge over these next few weeks at the Combine Senior Bowl and will be a name that's probably being talked about with the Cleveland Browns.
No question. All right, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, hashtag AskCBD. We'll get into the mailbag. Take last chance for your calls. 216-578-0850. Zagura, Gribbs, Gibbs. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
Listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zagura and Andrew Gribble. The Browns can confirm now, Gribbs, I'm told, that they have interviewed Adam Gase for their head coaching vacancy today. So the Browns have interviewed Adam Gase. That seems to be the first one in the books for the Browns, and they have confirmed that today. Adam Gase considered to be one of the best offensive minds in all of football.
A lot of competition for that guy.
a lot of competition, certainly, and we'll see what comes of that. But the first one's in the books. We've been told Terrell Austin's coming up soon. Paul Gunther and Hugh Jackson will be over the weekend. Doug Marrone is supposedly later in this week. So keep it tuned to ClevelandBrowns.com and, of course, the Browns mobile app, and you will have the latest on all of that, Gribbs. Will you not?
Yes, we will.
By the way, don't worry about what's going on in New Orleans anymore. The Saints will have Sean Payton as their head coach next year, which means they're probably going to keep him. They're probably going to keep Drew Brees. So it seems like much ado about nothing.
I'm sure there was nothing going on there.
No, but they figured it out, and they were able to get it done.
So, again, two less openings than maybe we expected 3 days ago with the Saints and Colts staying the course.
Which is good. I think that's good.
Well, because the Colts opening, if that had opened up, that would have been the opening in the league.
Yeah, with Andrew Luck.
Yeah, I mean, you have your quarterback.
Try your luck with Andrew the Giant.
There are some issues with that roster otherwise, though.
Yeah, maybe they should have drafted an offensive lineman for him instead of 8,000 more receivers.
I know.
Maybe he wouldn't have a spleen issue.
As a T.Y. Hilton owner, watching the Colts was infuriating, seeing five other guys catch passes.
Well, did you see how much, and Chud got blasted by the play, T.Y. Hilton specifically, about the play calling. T.Y. was no fan of that play calling.
There was no reason to be. They were struggling to score points against the Dolphins at the end of the year. They were struggling at everyone.
Well, you know, when you talk about Calvin Johnson, who's contemplating retirement, and you see Andre Johnson, just how quickly you can fall off that cliff as a big physical receiver. And I thought his season this year was one of the more disappointing things in football. So I thought he really struggled.
That's a good question. What is the ideal mold for a long career as a wide receiver? Because we always say the same thing about speed guys,
I bet
too.
Antonio Brown,
even though he relies on the quicks and the speed.
Great route runner, very precise, great hands. He's not going to get as physically beaten up. I mean, look at Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice is the model of longevity. You know, 6-foot-ish size, not too big. But as these guys, you know, continue to evolve as athletes, we'll see. But who's been the longest tenured receiver in the league? It's got to be Andre Johnson has been the best for the longest.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think a guy that fits this mold is like an Amari Cooper in Oakland.
Is built that way. Yeah, absolutely. He reminds me a little bit of an Antonio Brown. Yeah, I would say Andre Johnson wasn't. Larry Fitzgerald has been successful for a very long time.
He's adapted though too.
He's changed his game. He's now a slot receiver. He's kind of Hines Ward in that Bruce Arians offense.
Can Calvin Johnson, if he comes back, become that kind of receiver?
I think he could. I think that when you're as big as Calvin Johnson, I just think it's a different level. You know, you're putting your body through a different level of stuff. You know, 6'5", 235, that's a massive human being. Like, Moss had good longevity because he was so thin. I think if you're thin, Allen Robinson's kind of built that way. Allen Robinson could be a guy that could be around for a while. Like, Julio, I think, is too big to be around for forever.
Like, did Plexico had other issues as well, but I think he was kind of trending in that direction as well on the field.
Brandon Marshall reinvented himself
this year, though.
Had one of the best seasons in the history of the league, Brandon Marshall, this year. 1,502 yards and 14 touchdowns. So he's been around since 2006, Brandon Marshall has. So similar to Calvin. How long has Fitz been around?
A while.
What do you think? On top of your head.
2002, right?
Yes. 2002? 2004 for Fitz.
Okay. 2002 was the Heisman year? No, 2003, I guess.
Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, there are a lot of good players, but it's amazing when you look at Fitz and his numbers on a year-to-year basis. Outside of that 2007 to 2011 run, he's had a lot more variation than, like, Calvin, Moss. Those guys were consistent ballers.
So we said Calvin Johnson, instant Hall of Famer. Is Larry Fitzgerald an instant Hall of Famer for longevity?
I think so. He's got 1,000 catches, 13,000 yards, 98 touchdowns. I would think that he has a very good shot of being a Hall of Famer.
Problem is there's going to be a lot of these guys coming up.
Well, and the stats are going to change. You're going to have to look at the impact and where he was relative to the rest of the league throughout his career. Now, for example, Larry Fitzgerald never led the league in receiving yards, but was up there, led the league in touchdowns and catches a couple of years. Multi-time Pro Bowler, only one-time first-team All-Pro. Career, receiving yards a game, he's top 20. Receiving yards, top 20. Receptions, top 20. Touchdowns, top 20.
He's in.
Yeah, he's going to make it. His career numbers are better than Calvin's. That'll do it for us. We're going to have more updates for you on the coaching search as the week goes on. We'll talk to somebody who knows a little bit about Adam Gase. Want to thank Connor Orr and Matt Derry for being with us. A lot to get to here. An exciting week, I believe, in Brie as we continue to take those steps towards the future. Hopefully, as everybody keeps saying, rock bottom, bouncing off of it like we're on a trampoline, Gribbs. And Gribbs, it was a pleasure to be with you today, my friend.
Great filling in.
Yeah, keep up the great work on ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. That'll do it for us. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys, for the Gibbs, for the Gribbs. I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to another edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
The preceding program was a production of the Cleveland Browns and a part of the Browns Media Network.